Today we're here on Big Wolf versus the Sedalia Water and Sanitation District. May I have the interview of appearances, please, first for the appellants.
Good morning, Chief Justice Paul Bennington for the Attorney General's Office, and I'm joined by Kate Lyon, also the law office.
Will you be doing the argument?
Yes.
Thank you. And for the appellees, please.
Your Honor, Tim Buchanan, appearing on behalf of the Sedalia Water and Sanitation District. I'm joined today with John Buchanan and Leslie Masters. I will be doing the argument.
All right, thank you very much. Counsel, this is a case which has been set for 1 hour. That, of course, means that you each have a half an hour. You both know how it works. Mr. Bennington, you'll have to keep track of your own time if you wish to reserve some rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Please go ahead and remember.
May it please the Court. This case involves a water court application filed by the Sedalia Water and Sanitation District to change its interest in the Stephen Sump No. 1 Ball Ditch Water Right, which I'll refer to as the Ball Ditch Water Right. The issue before the court is whether 24 years of no beneficial use of the right, since it was last changed by the water court in 1986, should be included in the calculation of the water right's average annual historical consumptive use for Sedalia's new changed purposes. The engineers are asking this court to reverse the water court's decision that issue preclusion bars the engineers from contesting the true average annual historical consumptive use of the Ball Ditch Water Right in light of its 24 years of no beneficial use. The Water Court's order held that it was determining a question of law, so this court reviews the Water Court's decision de novo. I'd like to provide a brief statement of the history of the Water Right and the case before the Water Court. The Ball Ditch Water Right was originally decreed with an 1872 priority for 3 CFS for irrigation out of West Plum Creek in the South Platte River Basin. Sedalia's interest in the Ball Ditch Water Right has been included in 2 previous change decrees. The first change in 1976, in case number W2127, involved a new alternate point of diversion at the Stephen Sump No. 1 for just a portion of the original water right. In that case, the historical diversions were quantified with an annual maximum amount and a 10-year rolling average. The first decree only quantified the diversion amounts and included no calculation of historical consumptive use, most likely because this portion of the water right would continue to be used to irrigate the same 30 acres of land it had historically irrigated.
So that's in effect a 72 application.
The decree was entered in 76.
Yeah, so shortly after the 69 Act, it's just an alternate point of diversion.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Now, because the type and place of use was not being changed, it was unlikely there'd be any enlargement of the historical consumptive use if the historical diversions were, the diversions going forward would be limited to their historical amounts. The second change case was filed in 1983 in case number 83 CW364, and the decree was entered in 1986. This was the first decree to calculate the historical consumptive use. The second decree only involved 27.1% of the amount of water that was in the first change case. This equals 0.116 CFS, which is the same amount of water that is before the court under Sedalia's application today. The second change application was filed by the Owens Brothers Concrete Company, which changed its interest from irrigation use to the augmentation use to replace out-of-priority depletions from one tributary well to be constructed at the Owens Concrete Plant. The second change decree quantified the average historical consumptive use as 13 acre feet per year. Now, the engineers were parties to the stipulated decree in case number 83 CW 364, and they agree that its determination of average historical consumptive use of 13 acre feet per year is res judicata for all of the years prior to 1986. In other words, for the 115 years from 1872, when the water was appropriated, to 1986, the average annual consumptive use is presumed to be 13 acre feet per year. after 1986, Owens Concrete never used its well or the Bald Ditch water right. In 2009, Sedalia purchased the water right and filed a present change application in 2010 to change the right from augmenting one tributary well at the concrete plant to augmenting two of Sedalia's municipal wells and an undefined number of Sedalia's replacement wells. Now, the parties agree in this case that the water right was not placed to beneficial use under the Owens Decree for those 24 years between 1986 and 2010. Thus, the records are perfectly clear in this case regarding historical use. We have 115 years at 13 acre feet per year, and we have 24 years of no beneficial use. The engineers believe the water court erred in four fundamental respects. First, the court wrongly concluded that issue preclusion bars the engineers from contesting the average historical consumptive use quantified in case number 83 CW 364. This conclusion is a clear mistake of law, as I'll address in a moment. Second, the water court found that because there had been no use of the waterway, as opposed to some use that could be subject to requantification, the court would not requantify the average annual historical consumption use of the water right. This approach treats unused water rights more favorably than water rights that are actually placed to beneficial use. Third, the water court incorrectly assumed that junior water rights were only entitled to the return flow portion of the Bald Ditch water right, both before and after the 83 CW 364 decree, as if the water Owens failed to divert or claim for 24 years was no longer part of the tributary water supply available to juniors in priority. Fourth, the water court found that abandonment was the proper inquiry because requantification in this change of water right case was tantamount to a de facto abandonment of a portion of the water right. As this court knows, a change of water right claim and an abandonment claim involve different elements, different legal standards, different burdens of proof, and entirely different burden shifting schemes.
Isn't it true, though, in the modern era of changing water rights, that the important issue has been a quantification of the true water right, the appropriation, the original appropriation under its decree, and that this is a case that we, in effect, addressed at Midway, where we ranches, where we basically looked at the consumptive use and said, well, this consumptive use, when quantified appropriately, is to be considered the measure of the true appropriation. So doesn't the state engineer's argument basically dilute the property use right of the original appropriation without any look at abandonment? So why didn't Judge Hartman get this entirely correct, that it's the consumptive use, taking care of injury if you subsequently change it, that we already, in effect, addressed in the Midway Ranches case?
In the Midway Ranches case, Your Honor, you found that the determination of historical use was only res judicata prior to 1992, when the decree was entered. And, Your Honor, what we believe is that usufructuary water rights continue to mature over their entire life.
Well, and the problem is that augmentation is only a periodic use, if you will, and is basically there as a standby to be sure that you can correct against injurious depletions and allow an out-of-priority diversion, correct? And that was a augmentation case we were looking at in Midway Ranches, right?
That's correct. That was an augmentation case, Your Honor. And the measure of a water right, based on its historical use, we think is determined at each change of water right case. In other words, you look at circumstances existing at that time, and the measure of that matured water right is determined for that change purpose.
Well, the concern we had in Midway was the perhaps enlargement by the issuance of new shares. And so when we allowed the 0.7 acre foot per share, we were basically saying, hey, that's the consumptive use determination. You can't go ahead, issue new shares, and enlarge the water right. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Your Honor. The concern was about the use on a per share basis. And That case involved a ditch-wide analysis for all the shares in the ditch, even though only certain shares were being changed. So that ditch-wide analysis was raised judicata for the entire ditch through 1992. Now, some of the shares that were unchanged could come in for a later change. Now, their use could either increase or decrease based on...
But wasn't the point of the case is that there would be some security and reliability without having to go through the whole process about what amount of consumptive use water based on the original appropriation under its decree matured and is therefore transferable and consumable? And
yes,
that you don't have to go through this analysis that you just suggested.
Yes, Your Honor, we agree that it provides security for what was actually determined. But those non-shareholders who are going to come in subsequently to change their water rights, they could rely on that determination through 1992. But when they come in to change their shares, they need to demonstrate whether circumstances have changed, whether their historical use after 1992 has either increased or decreased. They have the ability to claim more HCU if their actual use increased. So we think each change has to be evaluated at the time of the requested change based on conditions existing at that time, and that usufructuary rights do not become fixed. Just as they mature and ripen through use, they can also spoil through non-use. And not encouraging water users to place their water rights to beneficial use, we believe, is contrary to the usufructuary nature of water rights. It facilitates speculation and waste. It discourages beneficial use. And it's contrary to maximizing the beneficial use of the waters of the state. In High Plains, Your Honor, you came down very strongly, this court came down very strongly, that when you come in to change a water right, you need to show you can and will put that to beneficial use. And so when you come in and change it for an augmentation case, you need to demonstrate that you can and will put it to that augmentation use. You apply the anti-speculation doctrine that case. And one of the problems we're seeing, Your Honor, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to...
Well, it seemed to me as a slight misunderstanding perhaps, but we're talking about the continued appropriation using the original appropriation date, and you had to show that you were going to actually use it in a location for which you had a need. But it seemed to me that the opinion basically says continued appropriation. It does not say it's a new appropriation. If a new appropriation would take a junior right based on some kind of a filing date, much later than the original senior right that is being carried through to the new place of use, type of use, and assuming protection against injury in the course of doing that, which of course your brief would concede, it always does that. But it seems to me the High Plains issue was only to say you can't hold or change these for speculative purposes. If you're going to retain the original priority date, you have to show you have some need for it. Well, that's basic prior appropriation law.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. But in doing so, you identify the definition of appropriation and that High Plains was proposing a different type of appropriation for augmentation use, but didn't have any defined place of use like an appropriation should. And so it was recognizing that the water right priority continues, and you don't have to perfect a new appropriation because that was done for the original appropriation, but that you are doing a new appropriation now. The appropriation from the court is Owen's right to consume 13 acre feet per year for augmentation purposes. And so that is the historical use. We have to consider the historical use under the decree being changed. And in this case, it's been zero historical use. But we don't ignore the fact that there was 115 years of historical use at 13 acre feet per year. One of the problems we're seeing in many of our augmentation plan cases is water users coming in and trying to change much more augmentation water than they need. And then with the idea, well, we'll just park it. It's fixed. It now becomes a fixed asset as if it's been taken out of the tributary.
Well, but to the extent it isn't used, it's going down to fill other junior rights, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And those junior rights, that is, they have a constitutional right to use that water. And when they come in to change their water rights, they get to claim the use and consumption of that water under their water rights.
In other words, they get to claim a piece of this consumptive use water that belonged to the original appropriation. That's what you're arguing?
Well, it's we don't consider it to belong to the original appropriation, Your Honor. We consider it to belong to the people of the state of Colorado, and it's part of the waters of the state. And if Owens didn't need that 13 acre feet of consumptive use water, it became available to the next water rights in order of priority, and they had a constitutional right to divert all of it and use all of it and consume all of it. And when they come in to change their water right, they're going to claim that same, that lawful historic consumptive use. And the effect of the water court's decision is to double credit consumptive use during that 24 years by saying, oh, no, we're just going to turn a blind eye to that 24 years of non-use and say, oh, it's still 13 acre feet per year when it wasn't. And then the next junior water right comes in and claims the consumptive use of that same element of water, we get a double crediting that eventually will, you know, work its way down the chain of priorities and into junior appropriators. So we think the water court's decision does not properly allocate the historical consumptive use of the state's waters to those water rights that actually place the water to beneficial use. And we think it's very dangerous to suggest that somehow, because you at one time in one period of the history of the water right consumed a certain amount of water, that comes out of the tributary water supply and somehow treated as non-tributary water that's personal to the developer and to which nobody else has a constitutional right. We just think that's an incorrect application of Colorado's prior appropriation.
Could I ask you to stick with Midway just a minute, and the cases before it or and subsequent to it, and focus in on the language we've used rather than just the policy? You've read these and studied them more seriously than I have recently here. When we talked about a decree, the measure of an appropriation, or the measure of the water right, as not being the amount that was in the decree, but rather was implicitly and always implicitly limited by the historical consumptive use. In any of those cases, did we ever address the question whether we were talking about a first change, or were we just, did our language, at least in those cases, seem to indicate that whenever there was a change of water right, there was in order to determine the measure of the water that could be changed, one had to establish historical consumptive use?
The case law has basically just, spoken as if there's just one standard to all change of water rights. We haven't had a clear case like this dealing with these successive changes of water rights that are happening more and more often as we go forward. But you've always said that historical use is the measure of the water right for change purposes. And you've always said that each change should be evaluated on circumstances existing at the time of the change. And since 1965, in the Boulder and White Rock case, you've recognized that, ditch water rights are going to be subject to successive changes of water rights, and each change has to be evaluated on circumstances existing at the time of the requested change. So claim preclusion doesn't apply in change of water right cases. Midway Ranches was really the first case to say, but issue preclusion will attach to any previous decrees that determined historical consumptive use through the date of the decree. You were very clear about that in Midway Ranches, that it was the court properly combined the res judicata effect of the 1992 decree with subsequent evidence of changed circumstances that the water court did not consider that might be germane to the issue of injury. Here, we have 24 years of no beneficial use that the water court could have considered in the 83 case and did not consider. And so that's subsequent evidence of historical use never considered before. And we think the Midway Ranches case says that can be taken into account. And even now, the Division I court agrees with that. If there was some beneficial use, they would respond.
Well, that was the other I was going to ask you. Do you understand this order then to mean not that any subsequent change has to take into account the historical consumptive use, but rather only any subsequent adjudication, application for a change that involves no use of the water since the prior change? Is that how you're understanding this?
Exactly, and the water court's two subsequent orders that have been supplied with the briefs confirm that that's the water court's approach. If there was some beneficial use after a previous change decree, the water court would consider that, that it would be subject to re-quantification based on that historical use. But you get a free pass if there was no beneficial use.
And could you just say a word then about what was the rationale for making that distinction between some use and no use?
I think what got the water court off in that direction was this long period of non-use. You know, we had just come through the decennial abandonment cases in Division One, and that the water judge felt, hey, here where we have this long period of non-use, we should really just be talking about abandonment. So we're going to relieve the applicant of the requirement to establish and quantify the historical use, which in Trails End Ranch case, this court said, you need to establish and quantify your historical use, even if it appears that no other water user will be affected. And so we do think the water court's giving a pass to water rights that aren't used after their change.
Could I ask you, I don't want to eat up all your time, mm-hmm. but just on that point, and I don't know if this was partly what the water court may have had in mind, but you seem to be rather vague about the time period, as our prior cases seem to be, that one would take into account in establishing the measure for historical consumptive use. Could you just address that briefly, and why, if you have a 24-year period of no use, why are you seeming to say one would take into account even a broader period in deciding what the historical consumptive use is?
Yes, Your Honor, I think you're referring to the representative period for
yes,
the change
yes.
in water right. The representative period has only been used in cases where the records aren't clear. Here we have a case where the records are perfectly clear. We don't need to look at some representative period to see the historical use of the water right. We know what it was on this undisputed record. Therefore, there's no reason to go to a representative period. The representative period cases have been most recently in the Burlington case, where the court knew there was a mix of lawful uses and unlawful uses going on for a very long time. So they looked at the small period where they knew it was only lawful use and used that as representative in order to eliminate all the unlawful use. In the other case, Pueblo West, which was the first case to mention this representative period, the representative period wasn't a period of use. It was a period of calls on the river that the water court said, well, this is kind of representative of what the call regime would have been. I'm going to use that to eliminate out-of-priority diversions by this water user. Because the record wasn't clear, were those diversions in priority or out-of-priority? So the court looked at a representative period of the call regime, applied that to the diversions in order to get rid of the out-of-priority diversions. But this court has never held that when you have a perfectly clear record, that you somehow get to cherry-pick the most beneficial part of the record for your historical consumption.
Well, why, I guess what I'm asking in terms of timing, if you have a 24-year period, why doesn't your rationale lead you to the conclusion that there is no historical consumptive beneficial use of this water, and therefore none could be changed?
That is an argument that has been made by some, Your Honor, but that decree, the Owens Decree itself, confirms that there has been some historical consumptive use. So when we look at changing that decree, we have to take into account its finding that there was some historical use. Yes, there's been none since that decree was entered, but we don't ignore the fact that very decree that's being changed recognized that there was some historical use that should be, acknowledged for this new change case. And it's been the long-standing practice of the engineers to include these periods of non-use. And part of the problem here is the water court doesn't say, how's it going to address shorter periods of non-use? 5 years, 9 years, or intermittent periods of non-use? Those are all insufficient to give rise to a presumption of abandonment, but they form the pattern of the historical use of the water right. and we think they need to be included, especially when you're doing an average annual historical consumptive use. With that, Your Honor, said...
Counsel, I'm sorry. I'm not to let you sit down. Can you please address, there are a number of amici who filed briefs in this case, and what is the role of the fact that we're dealing with municipalities here? Can you address that? How do you factor that, if at all, into your analysis?
Well, Your Honor, this court has held that for change of water right purposes, municipalities are held to the same standards as everyone else. We do understand the special needs of municipalities to plan for future growth and development. We think they also need to plan for alternate points of diversion, alternate places of storage, you know, plan where they may need to use these change water rights in the future. And they should only change the amount of water they can and will put to use. We think we also need to encourage those municipalities to lease their water to others, come in with water court decrees that allow them the flexibility to lease their waters to irrigators or others until it's needed for beneficial use. The fact that if they put water on the shelf and it just sits there, it's still going to be available for them. The only time it's ever going to suffer any reduction is if they come in to subsequently change that water right in some fashion. And that's when we need to protect juniors and look at the historical consumptive use, because that is both a legal limit on the use of that water right for these new change purposes by Sedalia, but it's also an embodiment of the principle that junior water rights are entitled to stream conditions that existed at the time of their appropriations. With that, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time, Chief Justice.
That's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Buchanan?
May it please the court. My name is Tim Buchanan, appearing on behalf of the Sedalia Water and Sanitation District, who I will refer to as Sedalia. I will also refer to the state engineer and division engineer as the state. Sedalia's position in this case is supported by 13 different amicus briefs representing over 15 different water users. Sedalia urges the court to consider the arguments advanced in the Sedalia brief and the amicus briefs in resolving this case. The fundamental premise of the state's position is that where historical consumptive use of a water right has been determined in a judicial proceeding, all subsequent changes of that water right must also have a reevaluation of the historical consumptive use of the water right. This position is flawed and not supported by Colorado law. As a preliminary and determinative matter, it is important to remember that the decree entered in case number 86-CW-364, which was the 83 change proceeding and which defined the historical consumptive use of the water right, was stipulated to by the state and expressly provided for matters over which the water court retained jurisdiction under 3792-304, and all other issues adjudicated shall be res judicata as a result of this decree and shall not be subject to relitigation in the future. This determination by the water court has two significant implications. First, the state, like all other parties, is bound by its stipulations. In 1920, United States Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes stated, "Men must turn square corners when they deal with the government." Can we not expect the state to also honor its stipulations and do the same? The court should hold that the state to the stipulation it entered into in the 1983 case, and as stated in Midway Ranches, stipulations made in water cases are both judicial admissions and contracts and enforceable. Secondly, if the preclusion doctrines have any force of law, the stipulation evidences that the state should not be able to renege on its agreement and is barred by res judicata. The state asserts that it is relieved of the stipulation by virtue of the fact that the water right in question will be used for a different purpose. The state's position has no support in Colorado law. The issue of the historical consumptive use of the Ball Ditch water right was determined in the 1983 proceeding, and terms and conditions were imposed on the change to prevent injury to other vested water rights. upon inclusion of the Ball Ditch water right in the Sedalia augmentation plan, which was a case that was originally filed in 1983, the water would serve the same function as decreed in 1983, and that is replacement of depletions associated with tributary well pumping. The mere fact that the water will be used in a different augmentation plan or a different operation should not be used tantamount to a basis for redefining the historical consumptive use. This court has consistently maintained that once a determination of the historical consumptive use has been made, such determination is not subject to redetermination in a later proceeding.
We did have an exception in Midway Ranchers, though, didn't we?
You did have an exception for changed circumstances, but the exception, as I read Midway Ranches, pertained to where there was a situation where the number of shares in the ditch company changed, where there was some factor that you could no longer apply the 0.7 acre feet per share. If you change the number of shares, then the court should enter into a mathematical determination or make some determination to prevent an enlargement in the number of shares or the number of acre feet per share.
And the court allowed an in-advance ditch-wide consumptive use analysis to provide some kind of measure for which subsequent cases could rely on that number of acre feet assigned to each share, correct? I mean, instead of going through an individual consumptive use determination every time particular shares are changed.
That is correct. In that particular case, the court did specify that there had been proper notice, that the proceeding had been properly held to allow for a ditch-wide determination so that each share was allocated its proportionate amount of the consumptive use.
So it was basically a ditch-wide allocation.
That's correct.
Of the valuable property right, which is the burden placed on the public's water resource matured through beneficial consumptive use in order of priority. I mean, that's what's at issue, right?
That was what was issued in Midway Ranches. That is correct. And what we're talking about in this case is we have a similar situation, but we don't have a mutual ditch company. We have a water right that had its historical consumptive use defined in 1983 and then sought to be changed in a subsequent proceeding so that it could be used for further augmentation purposes. So the two cases, Midway Ranches and this case, are similar from the standpoint that both have prior determinations made in a case where the court determined the historical consumptive use. The changed circumstances that the court discussed in the Midway Ranches case only pertains to the types of changes that would affect the yield per share. And I believe it is a misconstruction by the state to assert that the Midway Ranches case held that you could evaluate any circumstances that existed after the original historical use determination. And part of this goes to what we discussed earlier is the maturing of the water right. Once the water right has matured and the historical consumptive use has been determined in a case, as occurred in this case and occurred in Midway Ranches, then the court should not say, let's go back and evaluate whatever has happened after that. Because that water right has been defined based on its original appropriation, not based on some change of use or some other activity that occurred after the determination of the historical consumption.
Could I ask a question for you to just flesh that out for me? I guess I'm having trouble with understanding the conceptual difference between the decree, a judicial determination of an appropriation, and the amount that is decreed there, as opposed to a change decree, which allows a certain amount to be changed. In the former case, notwithstanding the fact that we say that the decree simply confirms the fact of an appropriation, you had to already divert water and put it to a beneficial use, a certain amount, and we now verify that or formalize that with a decree. Nevertheless, that amount is not the measure of the water right. Rather, the measure of the water right is the amount that you of that you put to historical to a beneficial consumptive use. Have we not said the same thing, or at least maybe we weren't thinking about it, and that's the point. But doesn't our language imply that that would also apply to an adjudication of a change and a specific amount of water that can be changed, and therefore that it as well is implicitly limited to the historical beneficial consumptive use?
I believe you have said that in several cases, including Midway Ranches and Farmers Reservoir and Irrigation Company versus Consolidated Mutual Water Company. You have indicated that where the original adjudication frequently did not define all of the scope of the beneficial use. It didn't define the...
Always. Haven't we said that? It's implicitly always limited.
Mm-hmm. So in the later change adjudication, the court, in protecting other water rights, that is preventing material injury to other water rights, makes a determination of the historical consumptive use and determines how that consumptive use or the water right has matured and makes that determination. And it's our position that once the court makes that determination, that is the historical consumptive use determination.
And why should it be fixed at that point if it wasn't fixed at the point of the original decree?
Because we now have, there's a couple of reasons why we want to do them. First, the first change case is where the court has an opportunity to actually review what the intent of the original appropriator was and determine how the water was in fact utilized and make terms and conditions to prevent injury to other vested water rights. The second change proceeding would only theoretically, and as the state has not clearly indicated, but the second change proceeding would have then evaluate what happened after you've already determined the historical consumptive use of the water. And there are several problems with that. First of all, it undermines a very strong stated purpose of the state of security and reliability with respect to water rights. People rely on those water rights, but people also need municipalities, farmers, businesses, various people need to know that they are going to have a reliable water supply. So they acquire water rights, they change them, incorporate them in plans for augmentation, but they may not utilize that water to the full extent every year. In fact, if you're utilizing the water to the full extent every year and utilizing every drop, you have no security. And in part, the augmentation plan provides for some ability to ensure that you're going to have the water right. Because if you're running a municipality or you're running a business, you cannot afford to run out of water. So some frequently, businesses, municipalities acquire more water rights than they may need in the average year, but try to project what they need in later years. This is crucial to these entities to have the ability to acquire these water rights and to utilize them as they need without fear of having a requalification.
And do I understand the engineer's position to be that that's the reason we have said one measures the historical beneficial use over a lengthy period of time to do away with these kind of small term changes or uses?
Well, I'm not sure that's what they're saying. I believe what the state engineer's office is saying is that you just take whatever the record is and use that record, the entire record, from the inception of the water right to the new change, after the first change proceeding, and take that entire record and make an average. That's not the law. The law that you have reiterated on numerous occasions is that you take a representative time period. That is a time period that shows how this water right was actually utilized under its original appropriation. So if we make that representative time period, make the determination of the historical consumptive use in that change proceeding, and then whatever happens after that cannot be part of that representative time period because it's not being used for the same types of purposes. So if you start adding in the uses that occurred afterwards, you start putting a lot of potentially zeros into the calculation. But this water wasn't abandoned. It wasn't a water right that was not going to be used. It was part of an overall water rights portfolio necessary to serve the needs of that particular water user. And so to assert that it's just strictly an average is wrong. To assert that we use the entire period is wrong. What is correct is we use a representative period prior to the first change proceeding. And if we fail to do that, we totally undermine the security and reliability of water rights held by many people, municipalities, businesses, farmers, ranchers, in their various augmentation plans and operations.
Mr. Buchanan, if I could just interrupt. I have a question. So we're in a couple other cases this week about abandonment, and each one of those cases, the water rights at question were put on an abandonment list. And what I'm wondering is why, since Judge Hartman seemed to think that this case should be treated as an abandonment, how does that all work? No water has actually been running in this particular water right, I think, since 1986. Is that right?
That's 86,
correct. 86, so that's clearly more than 10 years. So even if the abandonment list started in 1990, 2000, 2010, we've gone through a couple of sequences when this water right, if it were to have been abandoned, at least in the eyes of the state engineer of that particular district, could have or should have been put on an abandonment list. So it seems that what Judge Hartman is kind of ordering is, so we're not going to look at this as a requalification kind of a problem. We're going to look at it as an abandonment problem, but it's not before him as an abandonment problem, except by virtue of his decision. That's confusing to me. Could you talk about that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. I believe what Judge Hartman was trying to address was a situation similar to what happened in this case, where there was a long period of non-use. And Judge Hartman was saying, well, in that case, where you have a period of non-use after the water has been changed for a new use, and the historical use has been defined, that any reevaluation of the water right should be based on the abandonment standard, not simply the passage of time in this particular case.
So what's the difference between, he says I have his order in front of me, the court will allow the parties to argue whether abandonment may be raised by opposing parties. And then he goes on to say that something along the effect, the applicable standard based on the particular facts is abandonment and not requantification.
Right.
So I guess, is he looking, and I know there's a difference, of course, between how you evaluate water rights when you're talking about whether or not they've been abandoned or versus requantification. But what is it that he would anticipate actually doing?
Well, excuse me.
Please, I'm finished.
In my interpretation of the order,
yes.
That what Judge Hartman was saying was that requantification under 3792.305 was not appropriate.
Right.
And part of the reason it's not appropriate is it doesn't have as high a standard as you have an abandonment proceeding. And so what I think Judge Hartman is saying is, if someone wants to come in and claim that the water right should be modified in some way, then the burden falls to the higher standard of abandonment and not under a requalification.
So then would it follow that unless that party can show that this water right was abandoned, the change that your client is asking for should be granted? I mean, is that logical?
That is logical, and that is precisely what happened here, is the state did not assert abandonment, was unwilling to proceed with an abandonment claim, and so we were allowed to proceed with obtaining the historical consumptive use. Had the state asserted an abandonment claim, they would have needed to demonstrate intent to abandon coupled with non-use, a higher standard in that situation. I believe what Judge Hartman was looking at in this context was trying to provide that there may be some circumstance in the future where the party has totally walked away from the water right, and abandonment would be the type of claim where could be asserted to prevent resurrection of the water right. However, it's important not to have a multitude of exceptions in this context, because once you start asserting, well, we'll look at changed circumstances over and above the changed circumstances that were described in Midway Ranches, you end up having litigation over this issue in every case, because the junior or the other water users have nothing to lose. Mr. Bennington said, well, the water right might actually go up. No, the water right can never go up in the quantity of historical consumptive use. That proceeding regarding the historical consumptive use defined that historical consumptive use. That is the upper limit. So in any future reevaluation, the best that could happen is the water user will receive that historical consumptive use. The most likely scenario is if you allow passage of time to be asserted and zero uses to be asserted, if you allow various other arguments to be asserted, you end up having a lot more litigation. You completely defeat the concept of the preclusion doctrine, requiring that these issues be resolved once and for all in that one proceeding. And what you end up is you undermine the security of the water right.
But it promotes beneficial use, right?
Beneficial use is, in my view, is a concept that should be applied on a system-wide basis. Are we saying that we want this water right user to use the water? What we want is the system, the river system, to have beneficial use. If this particular water right is not utilized because it's part of a portfolio of water rights that will be utilized as conditions dictate, Justice Hobbs described, it goes to the next guy in line. It is not wasted. It gets allowed the water to be utilized by the subsequent water user.
Council, can I just follow up on that? So what happens with the double counting problem? Could I get you to address that? In other words, I think opposing counsel says, absolutely, it went down the stream, and then those juniors are going to come in, and they're going to establish their historical consumption, and there's going to be a double counting problem because you've got the same historical consumptive use on both uses.
And I think that's the fallacy in part of what the state's arguing about how consumptive use is actually determined. The way consumptive use is actually determined is the junior is not entitled to the water in that stream on the day of that appropriation. What the junior is entitled to is the stream system being properly administered in accordance with the decrees that have been entered with respect to the water rights. The junior knows or has notice in this case of the existence of the upstream, or the potentially upstream, of the quantification that has occurred. So in many respects, the junior already knows that. But what happens in these quantification proceedings is there is a conscious decision to actually factor out some of these uses that may have been made by the junior water right. And most notably, a situation that occurs is where there's Trans Mountain water. If the junior has been receiving the benefit of Trans Mountain water for many years, and the junior's been diverting it, and the Trans Mountain water right wants to stop delivering that water and use it for some other purpose, the junior has no recourse. And that is similarly the same concept here. As a term and condition of the decrees that affect the river, the other water rights, the junior water rights, are subject to those other decrees. And while the junior may enjoy the benefit of that decree or the non-use for a period of time, the junior has knowledge that the other water rights may exercise their water. And that, in that scenario, the junior
Are you finished with this? Could I follow up on that then? So in essence, what you're asking us to do, I think, is essentially impute beneficial use since 1986 to this particular water right in question, based on the use that it made prior to the 83 litigation. Is that what you would do in the future? What is the math you were asking us to do here?
The math that I was commenting on was if you have a mutual ditch company case like in Midway Ranches,
right,
and they issue more shares or fewer shares, you may need to do the math to reallocate the amount of acre feet per share.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mislead you. How if we had to decide what the beneficial use was of this particular ditch now, and I understand that you think we don't, but if we did, how would we go about doing that?
Well, the beneficial use has already been defined, and that is what I am asking for is a little different what I think the Chief Justice is asking for, or inquiring about. I am not asking for, let's do a redetermination of some sort with respect to the historical consumptive use. What I'm saying is that issue is res judicata. That issue is defined now, and we should use that number for all future purposes.
Okay, let's pretend that we're not going to talk about your ditch, all right? So we're going to talk about some other ditch in some other place. But it had the same facts as this particular situation and has been used for a long time. But there was a quantification some time ago. And for whatever reason, we decided to quantify that ditch. How would we do that? So try to get away from these particular facts. And wouldn't we take those 0 years into account?
In my opinion, no.
Why not?
Because the water right was part of, potentially, and we're assuming some facts here, but I'm assuming that the water right was a part of an augmentation plan, and that water was not needed at that particular time. But the historical use had already been defined. And so we don't need to go in and say, okay, we're going to evaluate this water right and determine what was the consumptive use after the original historical use determination.
Okay.
I would submit that we don't even go down that line of inquiry.
Okay, I understand. So then what you would want our holding to be, I think, is that in the case of an augmentation plan such as this, where there has been prior adjudicated consumptive use, and there is a requested change, that the water court should not be forced to reevaluate the consumptive use, but rather should merely look to see whether that water right has been abandoned. Is that right?
That is correct. That, okay, I believe, is the correct statement of Colorado law,
right,
and an appropriate holding of this court.
All right. Thank you. I think I understand.
Okay, counsel, if I could get you to comment then on taking into account your position about not requantifying this water right, how do you square that with Judge Hartman's order that suggests that had this water right actually been used, at least to some degree, he would requantify or would potentially be requantified? How do you square that, Judge Hartman's position? What's your take on it?
My take on it is I believe that is an incorrect statement. That you should, if the water was used once, twice, 20 times, that you should not use that as a basis to throw out the res judicata determination of the historical consumptive use and re-quantify. What that essentially says is if you use it to some degree, we're going to throw that back in the mix, and your water right was not mature at the time of the original consumptive use determination. We're going to throw it into the mix, and who knows what may happen. I believe that that was an incorrect statement by Judge Hartman.
Okay, so to that extent, you disagree
with
the rationale. Okay. On a slightly different note, and this ties in with Chief Justice Rice's question, how much of your position is really dependent on the augmentation purposes here? I mean, would your rule hold true even if the purposes to which the water was being put had nothing to do with augmentation? Or is it really sort of unique to augmentation because in an augmentation context, that's when we're most likely to see periods of non-use?
But I've used the augmentation as an example because that is a typical situation where people have multiple replacement sources and they may utilize one source over another for various reasons. I don't believe that it has a significant bearing on whether to apply the historical use standard that was previously determined in some other case. I'll give you a simple example. If a water right was changed and the historical consumptive use was defined and it was incorporated into a municipal supply, but was not part of an augmentation plan. But X number of years later, the municipality decides, in order to more efficiently operate our system, we need to use that same water right in a different way. And they have to go to court and quantify it. There is no basis, in my mind, to modify the historical consumptive use that has already been determined by virtue of the fact that the water right was not in an augmentation plan, but was in some other sort of changed operation. So in my view, the augmentation part of it is not that significant. It is whether the water right was part of the uses that could have been made of that water right.
Thank you.
So you want to be sure that the original appropriation is not enlarged. You want to be sure every time it's changed that you're protecting against injury when you make that change.
That is right? Correct.
And you want to be sure that the abandonment doctrine still applies. If the intent to abandon based on 10 years of non-use, the presumption that then puts on the other side the necessity of proving by preponderance of the evidence that they didn't intend to abandon it, that still all functions. But what is saved is the beneficial historic consumptive use, the true measure of the water right, and we've consistently said this is a use rights-based system so that the quantification continuing the original priority date, which is the aim of all of this, that is a consumable block of water subject to these other limitations that is usable it directly within a municipal system or by way of augmentation or whatever else. Right? Is that?
That is correct.
That's how you would summarize the case.
That's how I would summarize it. I would also just comment, though, I wouldn't necessarily use the statutory standard of abandonment for inclusion on the state engineer's list. I would use the common law standard rather than having the state.
Could I ask you one last question in light of your answers to these last two? If we wanted to make beneficial use fixed for all time based on an adjudication, why wouldn't we make it on the basis of the original decree rather than the first change?
I believe it's because of the problem of the water right has not matured. We don't have any evidence to see how the water right has been used.
Don't we say, though, that an adjudication is not determined, is not granting you a right, it's simply verifying the fact that you have already appropriated the water and put it to a beneficial use. And that's why we decree it for a specific amount.
That is true, but I think as was discussed in Midway Ranches, there was a tendency in the past, in some of those early adjudications, to claim more water than was actually applied to beneficial use. In order to prevent injury to other water rights, in that first adjudication, we look at the water right and we evaluate the actual use, not the projected at that time.
All right. Are there no further questions?
Thank you,
Mr. McKinnon.
Again, may it please the court. Junior appropriators coming on the stream in those 24 years of non-use, they took only subject to Owens' use of the water right for its augmentation purposes. They did not take subject to this threatened enlargement of use by Sedalia to augment numerous other wells. And it's the historical use doctrine is intended to protect those junior water rights. And taking that out of the change of water right case will eliminate that important protection for those junior appropriators going forward. The special needs of municipalities should be addressed by the General Assembly, and with all due respect, not by this court. If you look at the statutory scheme, the General Assembly has excused certain specific non-uses of water rights from historical use determinations if there are other public beneficial purposes, either through the land fallowing programs, the water banking programs, dedication to CWCB in-stream flow purposes. The General Assembly has said those temporary authorized uses shall not be included in the historical use analysis or in the calculation of
you just pointed it out. The appropriation is still being basically used for its decreed purpose. It's being used to park it in a reserve, conservation reserve, or crop rotational fallowing, let's say, or substitute supply plan, or some other periodic use, but the water right is still being retained under its original decree, correct? So what the General Assembly is basically saying is we're not going to count that lease out of the crop rotational fallowing plan site, we're not going to count that as zeros. So why doesn't that just support the argument that the legislature has recognized that there needs to be some recognition of that fact that non-use won't be counted against you? Isn't that basically what the legislature said?
For those authorized temporary uses, and in ISG versus, in the ISG case, this court held that if a water right is put to those authorized temporary uses, it will not count or discount the historical consumptive
use. And that ability then is to preserve your full historic consumptive use under the original appropriation in case at some time you want to sell a piece of that consumptive use, right? Because that's the valuable, after all, that's what has value. The consumption in the system, in priority, under its original date, which is what is preserved. It seems to me, very frankly, candidly, the state's missed the point here. It's going to erode the value and use of prior appropriation water rights and give a piece of the consumptive use to a junior. And we ought to be assuming the optimum use means you leave it in the stream in those years. We don't need it. You pull it in to your system and you use it, or you use it by augmentation. Now, this modern era of requantification was because CFS, the diversion, the head end of the ditch, needed some translation into a volumetric acre-foot determination of the historical ripened beneficial consumptive use, which is the measure, scope, and limit of the water right. Correct? I mean, that's all Hornbook prior appropriation law.
Yes, for the change purposes proposed at that time, but we do not believe usufructuary rights become fixed for all time.
So that consumptive use that was approved in the Stricker case, the change in 1891, from agricultural municipality gets diluted over the years, the juniors get to pick up a piece of that consumptive use.
They have a constitutional right to use any water that's available at their diversion points in the order of priority.
Sure, when it's available legally and under the available system of whatever Mother Nature has provided.
That's correct, Your Honor, but we look at the long-term average annual supply, which is very important in an overappropriated basin like the South Platte River, especially for junior recharge rights that are not in priority very often. So we have to look at that effect on the long-term average on the available water supply to those junior appropriators and protect them from a diminution of that due to Sedalia's enlarged use that had occurred under the previous decrees. And I see my time's up, Chief Justice.
Any other questions? All right, I think we're then finished with this case. Mr. Bennington, thank you very much. Mr. Buchanan, here's what's going to happen. We're going to take a